Well, if you could ask a leading apologist any question in the world, what would you ask? You're about to have an opportunity.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, blessed and delighted to be with you. So glad we have this time together. In a few minutes, I'm going to be joined by well-known apologist Greg Kuchel. We're going to be talking about some key issues in terms of defense of the faith and answering the tough questions that do exist in the world today. In fact, in every generation. They're just so much more accessible now through internet and other means. So going to have a great talk. And if you have a question for Greg, I'm going to try to get to some calls as well. Don't know exactly when in the program, but if you have a question you'd like to ask a leading apologist, or if you do not consider yourself a follower of Jesus or the Jesus of the scriptures, or you question whether the Bible is really God's word, or you wonder how could there be a good God in the midst of so much suffering, by all means, give us a call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. In the second hour today, and I know that many of you listening now don't get the second hour on your radio program, but you can listen on my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. In the second hour, we're going to discuss the NBA, Donald Sterling, the lifetime ban and the fine and the forcing him to sell his team. Was that a good move? Was that an overreaction? Is Mark Cuban, very liberal, owner of the Dallas Mavericks, is Mark Cuban right in terms of there being a slippery slope in doing that? We'll discuss that in the second hour. And if you say, oh, I want to call, but I don't get the program again, you can listen online, but you can still call. You can still call. We take calls even if you don't have the radio on. We can take your call, 866-34-TRUTH, but just don't call now about that because that's not going to be my discussion with Greg Kuchel. We lived for 7 years in or near Pensacola, Florida, and I came home from teaching last night, my Tuesday night class on Intro to Apologetics at Fire School of Ministry. I came home from teaching that Nancy had been following the weather, what was happening with the tornadoes, and she said the tornado looks like it went right over the house or near where dear friends of ours lived, and then unprecedented downpour, a river overflowing. It had overflowed when we were there years back, and it caused tremendous damage. That's when Hurricane George came in and just sat off the coast, and the rain kept coming down. And I just before the show started, got an email from one of our daughters. She'd lived there in Pensacola with us, and just some of the devastation. They're shocking. Of course, other parts of the country devastated, many lives lost. Nancy wanted me to take a look last night at some of the pictures of the people who had died, and person after person in the description, they were church going, one a homeschool leader in the area, a respected Christian, loving God. How is it that they died in the midst of the storm? For those who say that the tornadoes are judgment, well, why is it wiping out apparently godly, devoted people? It'd be one thing if we prophesied judgment, say, on the gambling capital of America, Las Vegas, and said, God's giving you time to repent, and if you don't, judgment's coming, and then the casinos were hit on the day that we said they'd be hit. You might say, okay, that's clearly judgment. There was a warning, and there it is. But how do we deal with these questions? Well, we're going to talk about them. We're going to talk about tough questions of the faith, how to handle them. And my guest, Greg Kuchel, also written the book, Tactics, a Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it's a great joy for me to speak to a fellow apologist because I get to ask the questions. I get to ask the hard questions and the challenging questions and put someone else in the hot seat. But that's why people get into apologetics, the defense of the faith. Michael Brown, glad to be with you. The number to call, if you have a question for my guest about to join us, Greg Kuchel, number to call is 866-34-TRUTH. Greg is the founder and president of Stand to Reason. Started out thinking he was too smart to become a Christian, ended up giving his life for the defense of the Christian faith. And this is a main burden that Greg carries, that the gospel message, that the faith of the New Testament can compete in the marketplace of ideas when it's properly understood and articulated. Greg once debated Deepak Chopra, a one-hour national television debate on Lee Strobel's Faith Under Fire. He debated atheist Michael Shermer on UU, its national radio show. Many, many great accomplishments. And he received his master's in philosophy of religion and ethics at Talbot School of Theology and his master's in Christian apologetics from Simon Greenleaf University. And he's hosted his own radio talk show for over 20 years. And without further ado, Greg, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Michael, well, I'm glad to talk with you. It's a treat to chat with you again.
Yeah, it was a joy to be on your show, and we've chatted a little bit here and there in person. So I'm so glad that you could find time to join me on the air. Greg, as you have been doing apologetics these many, many years, has anything changed through internet, through social media, through the accessibility of information, through the attack of the new atheists, through moral decline society? Is it kind of all of the above? How would you describe the sea change in the world of apologetics in the recent decades?
Yeah, I think there has been some changes. You mentioned the last decade, and I think that period of time is important, Michael, because in 2001 we had 9/11, and in an odd kind of way, I think that affected the debate. Probably 3 weeks after the attack on New York City and the Pentagon, and then the crash there in Pennsylvania, Thomas Friedman of the New York Times wrote an article called "The Real War." And the article was about, well, indirectly about terrorism, but he said terrorism isn't really the issue. Terrorism is just a means to an end. The real war is an ideological war that he called religious totalitarianism. And the way he defined that, Michael, was anybody who believed that their religion was true was a religious totalitarian. Mm. Now, this certainly was true of the people who crashed those planes into the Twin Towers, etc., but it's also true of a large portion of your listening audience and mine, Christians around the country who actually think their convictions are true as well. And in one fell swoop, Thomas Friedman had grouped all so-called fundamentalists together in the same group. Dangerous, in other words. And I think this is the new tone of the so-called new atheists. That is, not only are theists and Christians wrong in their views, that's what the old atheists thought, but they're also dangerous. Mm. And this tone of the danger that Christians pose, the threat they pose to our country, this is something that's a new development. And you see this theme resounding over and over and over again from the left, that we are not just wrong, we are dangerous. And yeah. And I heard Hardball, what's his name, Chris Matthews, I actually heard him say that the group most like the Taliban in the United States are the evangelical, are the Christian right, essentially. And Bill Maher has made a similar comment about evangelical Christians are the source of all kinds of hatred and the like. Now, this isn't really true of evangelical Christians, but it is the way that we are being characterized now in light of what happened at 9/11. And so I think that the one thing I could say for sure, though there have been other changes, is the change of tone, yep, the change of mood, and the change of increased hostility towards genuine followers of Christ.
There's an article I was forwarded this morning, but it's actually from June of last year. And it's citing Kathleen Taylor, neurologist at Oxford University. She said that Recent developments suggest that we'll soon be able to treat religious fundamentalism and other forms of ideological beliefs potentially harmful to society as a form of mental illness.
Uh-huh.
So you'll have some folks will say the Islamists, so they'll separate the Islamists from the genuine Muslims who are nice and peace-loving, and it's just the Islamists are the radical. And now we are the Christianists. That's the term that's being used.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wrote an article a couple of years ago, does Billy Graham advocate Sharia law? Because when he came out supporting the marriage amendment in North Carolina in some major ads here in his 90s and saying, you know, we need to stand for marriage, he gets compared to Taliban.
Yeah.
So the tone has changed. How is that? Does that put us more on the defensive? How do we respond? Because all people need to do is cherry pick some verses from the Old Testament or even from a parable of Jesus. And, hey, we're advocating wiping out those who don't agree with us.
Yeah, it requires a couple of things from Christians. In a certain sense, the time of the easy pickings is over for us. And what I mean by that is we can't just go out, characteristically I'm speaking now, we can't just go out with the simple gospel and expect that the simple gospel is going to do the same kind of work it did 30, 40, 50 years ago when people understood the terminology and did not have this kind of hostile attitude. I'm not saying that the gospel is not powerful, but what I'm saying is that what is necessary now is what Francis Schaeffer used to call pre-evangelism. There is more, we have to move more slowly. We have to be tactically wise in our conversations with people, which is why I wrote a book on tactics, a game plan for discussing your Christian convictions. We have to ask a lot more questions. We have to listen a lot more. So we can't expect that we can just toss out kind of a religious bromide, basically, some Christian slogans, and this is going to be adequate to transform people's lives because they speak a different language now. They speak a different cultural language. So that's one problem. Secondly, there are, as you know, Michael, yourself, in every area that Christianity can be challenged, whether it's the person of Jesus or the existence of God or the authority of the Bible or the existence of the soul or moral issues like homosexuality and abortion and right on down the line, every single possible way that Christianity can be challenged, it is being challenged right now. That is, there's a full court press from the outside in challenging all of our views. And, you know, the New Atheists have published books. Bart Ehrman has just come out with a new book about how Jesus became God, you know. And so there are all these attacks, which means that the follower of Christ needs the kinds of things that you provide in your show, defenses of Christianity, not just to allow to give an opportunity for a hearing of Christianity in the public square. That is, people won't even listen to your basic gospel presentation unless you've addressed some of these other problems. But Christians need that for themselves. They need that and for their own personal encouragement.
Exactly. And, you know, apologetics is pre-evangelism. It's also post-discipleship or the midst of discipleship. That, for example, when I do a debate, if I'm debating a rabbi or agnostic or gay activist or something like that, of course I want to reach that person. And of course I want to reach people in the audience that are listening that don't know the Lord. But first and foremost, I know I'm going to help believers.
Yeah.
Because when believers realize, wait, someone has the answer. I don't have much scientific background at all, but I know that William Lane Craig is out there and others are out there. And I'm not so strong in philosophy, but you're out there and others are out there. So once I know, oh, there's solid answers. Even though I have a vibrant relationship with the Lord personally and he genuinely saved me and everything, the intellectual and social bombardment can be very intense. And hence, just knowing the materials there, the people there, especially if we can do it in a winsome way, it's tremendously encouraging. Greg, your website, standtoreason.org, STR.org, I'm looking at it now, and it's got so many resources. Relevant questions that people are asking, and hear articles, hear videos on it. So just take a minute and let our listening audience know what they can expect when they go there. This is STR, as in Stand to Reason, STR.org.
Yeah, this we rolled out this new website about a year ago, and it is so much easier to navigate. Simply put, we've got thousands of pages of information on every topic you can imagine that has to do with a Christian being a solid follower of Christ in the context of this this increasingly hostile culture. So we answer the challenges with regards to almost everything that people are going to encounter. And the things that we haven't written on, I talk about on my own radio show. I do 3 hours a week. You can podcast it for free. I mean, it's not burdensome. That's just one Los Angeles commute, you know.
Right.
So, and I live in L.A. So it's a way of kind of staying on top of things. Of course, they can buy our books and our products and other books that we feature on our in our bookstore.
I tell you what, let me just jump in. When we come back, I want to present some tough questions to Greg Kuchel. Get this book, Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. Highly, highly recommended.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest today is Greg Kuchel, founder and president of Stand to Reason. The website, standtoreasonstr.org. Again, I'm looking at it right now. Very, very user-friendly. And as I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, that article, I need to read that, check that out. Oh, they're addressing that already. Excellent. So they are on top of things. And a recent book by Greg is praised by Norm Geisler, William Lane Craig, J.P. Moreland, Sean McDowell. I mean, this is a who's who list of leading apologists and thinkers commending the book. Greg, why did you write Tactics? It is, and by the way, for those that are intimidated by books like my 700-page Queer Thing Happened to America, this is a 200-page book, nicely formatted, easy to read. Why did you write this?
Well, Michael, I noticed that participating in, say, apologetics conferences around the country year after year, and this is where you and I actually face-to-face met a couple of years ago, I think, in Southern Evangelical Seminary's conference.
Right.
I noticed that there was a lot of good information that's being given, but there's something that's missing. And the thing that's missing is a bridge from the content to the conversation, say from the scholarship to the relationship. How do we, where do we get that bridge? And this is what I provided at a lot of those conferences where I talked about my tactical approach to engagement. Because this is there is a lot of content in the book, but the book is meant to teach you how to maneuver in conversations. Mm. The game plan is built around asking some foundational questions to draw the other person out, to get information from the other person, and then to begin to engage that person on their own convictions and ask them the reasons for their convictions. So it's really letting the other person do a lot more talking, I think, than what we are used to in the past. But then using the other tactics in the book, and they have different names like suicide and taking the roof off and just the facts, ma'am, and Rhodes Scholar, and these are all maneuvers to help people see the mistakes in thinking that they're making in their own view. And in so doing, in following this game plan, creating an environment where it is more, it's more likely you're going to have a productive opportunity to, as I put it in the book, put a stone in their shoe, you know, get them thinking.
Right, right.
Give them a limited amount of stuff to chew on to get them moving in our direction. You don't have to swing for the fences, in my view. In fact, you don't even have to get on base. If you just get in the batter's box,
right,
the Lord can take it from there. And the book Tactics is meant to help people get into the batter's box.
Yeah, and you know, I often will want to respond directly to something. I've got limited time. You know, there are tens of thousands of posts and comments that come in on different sites. And, okay, here's a quick opportunity to respond. Let me just quickly rebut this person with a soundbite answer.
Yeah.
Many times the best strategy is to say, why do you think that way? Or could you expand on that a little bit and just get them into a conversation? Because
sure,
many times it exposes real bankruptcy in their thinking.
Yeah, what do you mean by that? You know, and just something where you draw the person out a little bit more. Now, I have something I tell my audiences when I talk about questions like, what do you mean by that? They should expect what I call the Simon and Garfunkel response, these two musicians from the 60s who wrote this wonderful song called The Sounds of Silence. So when you ask, you draw a person out who's made some comment, some statement.
Here, let me give you an example. We're reading about the tornadoes. My wife Nancy and I are reading stories last night. Family after family, God-fearing, teaching in church, homeschooling, seem to be committed Christians. And they're the ones, not the only ones, but it seems to be a good percentage, they're the ones dying. There's so many verses in the Bible that talk about God protecting his people in the book of Proverbs and all that, and it'll go well with the righteous, and the wicked won't live out half their days, and so on. So someone comes to you and they say, where's God? Where's the God of the Bible? I mean, why are these godly people dying? Where's your God? Where do we go from there?
Okay, well, here's my question. I'm going to role play it. Do you think Jesus had anything to say about these things?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, here's what he said. He said, in this world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. So we have a statement from Jesus in the New Testament, but we also have, say, statements in Proverbs that seem to indicate something different. So how do we reconcile this? Are Proverbs promises?
Well, I mean, the righteous will be delivered from death. Seems like that's a guarantee. It's black and white.
Well, if I said a stitch in time saves nine, that's an American proverb. Does that mean every time that you do something in advance that you're going to avoid adversity?
It's a principle then. But why doesn't the principle work?
Super. So in other words, a proverb isn't a promise. It is a description of the way things usually work. And so in the case of the book of Proverbs, where God talks about godly living, if we do the wise things in Proverbs, we're going to avoid a lot of the difficulty that stupid living brings upon us. But that doesn't mean we're going to avoid every single bit of adversity. And that's why Jesus comes in to warn us, when we live in a world that is hostile to Christianity, we're going to have the pushback that the world gives. So they're not really in conflict with each other, but they are. But they complement each other. Now, notice how, in answering that question, Michael, I used a series of questions to engage you, get your commitment to certain notions, help educate you, and then kind of gave my soundbite answer at the end. Notice how different that is than just giving the soundbite answer. And the way I did it, it's more conversational.
Right.
I brought you on board.
You forced me to think. You forced me to think, too, because one of my answers, if it's a typical person, I'm throwing the Bible at you, but I've never even read the Bible. Tell you what, just got to take a break. When we come back, let's just go a little further with the subject of, well, why are there natural disasters at all if God is a good God? Then I'm going to ask Greg some of the biggest issues that we all need to be able to counter, respond to today. Reminder, my friends, on WMCAW AVA in New York, D.C., keep listening by going online to askdrbrown.org. Greg Kuchel's website, Stand to Reason, str.org. His last name, in case you're not familiar, K-O-U-K-L. And the book we're talking about, Tactics, Super Practical, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. All right, I'm reading to you from the Tree of Life version. Judah, a slave of Yeshua the Messiah and brother of Jacob, to those who are called, who are loved in God the Father and kept safe for Yeshua the Messiah, may mercy and shalom and love be multiplied to you. You say, Judah, what's that? Ah, well, it's called Jude, but it's really Judah, another Jewish follower of Yeshua the Messiah. You say, how do I get this? Well, the Tree of Life version, for the first time now, both the Old and New Testament, it is now available, and the first 20,000 copies are on their way over to us here in the States, being shipped over. We'll have them very, very soon, and our ministry is one of the only ones to be getting these. Your gift of any size, we recommend $25, but your gift of any size, you'll get one of these first copies of the complete Tree of Life version, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. My guest, Greg Kuchel. He is the founder and president of Stand to Reason, that is str.org, online. And the book we're talking about, his recent book, Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. According to William Lane Craig, tactics will make you a more effective ambassador for Christ. J.P. Moreland, the authoritative treatment of how to employ various strategies and conversations with unbelievers about the Christian faith. Greg, what would you say are the most common questions that your ministry gets, the biggest issues that people are struggling with today?
Well, a couple have come to mind, three, in fact. The first one is the problem of evil, which is a perennial concern. I think it's, in a sense, a little bit ironic because the problem of evil turns out not to be, in my view at least, a good argument against God, but a good argument in favor of God's existence. And this is what the moral argument for God entails. C.S. Lewis developed this argument in his famous little handbook, Mere Christianity, at the beginning, but others have developed it too. And so the problem of evil is something that needs to be addressed, and if the Christian is familiar with the issue, then they can actually turn that into an advantage. The second issue is the issue of pluralism, and here I mean religious pluralism, the idea that there is something wrong with the notion that Christians think they're right, that Jesus being the only way of salvation. This is wildly politically incorrect, Michael, as you know, and consequently people push back very, very hard on this because they think that this reflects not just an odd theological point of view, but they think it reflects a character flaw. That is, there's something wrong with you if you think that your religion is the true religion. And this brings us back to the Thomas Friedman article that I mentioned earlier, that smacks of religious totalitarianism, according to his assessment, and that alone makes you a dangerous person. Never mind that the fundamentalist Christian would likely pray for you and the fundamentalist Muslim would possibly kill you. This distinction does not register with them. They just see all these fundamentalists who think they're right kind of in the same boat. So that requires a Christian to be able to make sense of the claim that Jesus himself made, and incidentally was uttered by every single person who he trained to follow after him. All of his disciples and apostles had the same message. Mm-hmm. But the third issue is one you're well aware of, and I'm actually going to mention homosexuality, but that's only the tip of the iceberg. The third issue, more broadly, is the attempt of the culture to marginalize Christians because they think that Christians are immoral for their views. Mm-hmm. So they are being called bigoted, for example, because they're against same-sex marriage. Were there powerful, principled reasons why same-sex marriage is a bad idea, which is why, you know, the idea isn't even older than the cell phone, as one Supreme Court justice put it. You know, society and cultures have lived by a notion since the beginning of time, universally, and maybe they had a good idea there. But if you object to this, you are immediately called a name, your character is called into question, you're called a bigot. And more, culture is very happy to punish you, and I'm using my words advisedly here, to punish you for what they think is bigotry. You are no longer free to be a bigot. That's not just bad manners. That becomes actionable now in our court system and in our culture, and I could give you a litany of examples of that, but you know them well. Brendan Eich is a recent example over at Mozilla, and even all of this flap about the Clippers owner.
Yeah, Donald Sterling. Yeah, in fact, that's next hour I'm going to discuss that. the whole Donald Sterny flap, and where does that go? Again, my guest, Greg Kuchel. Visit the website, standtoreason.org, STR.org.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, just a reminder, friends, my newest book, Can You Be Gay and Christian, comes out next week. Of course, you can pre-order it online. But if you'd like to get a numbered, signed copy just from the first few hundred that come in, this is the last week to do it because next week the book will be available for purchase. So to do that, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Right on the homepage, you can order from there. Again, that's special edition because the first printing that comes in, we will number it. I'll sign it for you personally with a scripture, and you'll find the contact to be absolutely what you are looking for. My guest, Greg Kuchel, founder and president of Stand to Reason, the website str.org. Greg, you've had a number of debates from atheists to Deepak Chopra.
Uh-huh.
Were you challenged? I don't mean challenged in your own faith, but challenged by any arguments, ones that you really had to dig deep for answers, or maybe over the years, you know, scientific arguments or other things that
right.
you studied?
Deepak Chopra was not a difficult debate, in a sense, on the merits. Debates are always, as you know, they're always a challenge. You have to concentrate a lot. Debates aren't won often by the best argument, but by the best presentation, who's quicker on their feet, and that's a liability, and so there's a lot of danger involved. But in the case of this TV debate, one-hour TV debate with Deepak Chopra on Lee Strobel's Faith Under Fire, that went really well, and I think partly because I was prepared, and Dr. Chopra was not. He usually, this is my sense, he doesn't usually debate people who disagree with him. He usually talks with people who really like him. And so even when he was on national programs, I saw him on Larry King many times, he didn't get pushback hardly at all. Nobody pushed back on him. And in this case, I did push back. I was very generous with him, and you can get a lot of the debate on YouTube. YouTube, look for Kuchel Chopra, and you'll find it. But I pushed back on him legitimately. I was nice to him, but I used my tactical approach as much as possible. And the irony is, as he was complaining that my approach to religion was wrong. It was narrow. It was intolerant. You know, because I thought my view was the only way. But the irony is he was promoting a book at the moment, even on the show that he was writing, and the title of the book was "Love Is the Way."
Uh-huh.
So he thought his view was right, but he was objecting because I thought my view was right. Now, it's a classic suicide situation. That would be the suicide tactic, and I was able to exploit it. And so that one went fairly smoothly in that regard. Like I said, people can watch that. Now, my debate with Michael Shermer was more difficult. That's a three-hour national radio debate on Hugh Hewitt's syndicated program. That was a couple of years ago. And Michael's a very affable guy. He's a smart guy. He's done a lot of these kinds of things. He's likable. And the issue that I talked a lot about was the moral argument. And it was more difficult dealing with somebody like Michael sitting right at my side going back and forth in a discussion. So it was not the case that anything that any of these guys said had the least impact on me as being a genuine challenge to Christianity or to theism. But sometimes it's, as you know, Michael, just from your own experience, it's the maneuvering that is the challenge. But I still think I acquitted myself well in that case, too. The big thing in public debates is you have to be careful about the footwork. And somebody who's faster on their feet, gets the barbs in that you don't respond to right away, you know, that's what can hurt you. And this is one of the reasons I don't really care for debates, because they're more about gamesmanship than they are about making a case.
Yeah,
I'd rather
understood.
Sit down with somebody and just talk with them.
Yeah, understood. And of course, each of these things have different purposes. I've enjoyed doing debates. You know, there's so many challenges you get. You can't respond to everything in writing, and here you can do it and get a lot of stuff out. A lot of it, though, of course, is the format and the ability to go back and forth and probe one another. Let's though dial back to something we started with in terms of the problem of evil. I just role played a little bit, challenging the goodness of God and the promises of Scripture in light of the tornadoes and the suffering. That's acute. Tsunami, so much more acute. Why, if God really saw this world coming, or if He's going to create a world and perhaps the majority of the people He creates are going to end up in hell, what kind of a good God with foreknowledge and power, the old argument, would create a world with so much pain, suffering, with little children dying of horrific diseases? They're in agony right now, and they're going to be here for 6 months, and that's it. They're gone. You know, where's the intervention now? And why did God start this whole thing in the first place?
Well, let me... this is... I'm going to role-play a little bit with you in a second, but I just want to offer a predicate to this portion of our conversation. The combination of questions that you just asked is among the most difficult to answer, and virtually any question that starts with why would God inevitably has the same answer. I don't know. If that's the answer I'm going to give, even after 40 years of Christian and the bulk of that time in Christian apologetics, because there are so many things that God has done or He has allowed to take place that He simply has not told us what His reasons were. And this is where I fall back on, I'm a father, I've got a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old, and my kids don't understand most of the time why I tell them to do what I tell them to do. And in the best of those moments, when they don't like it, I'm making a wise decision. I don't always make wise decisions, but, you know, in the best of those moments, and when they say, why, Papa, why do I have to do this or that, they are not even capable of comprehending the rationale, because the issue is related to adult thinking about the way life works that kids just don't have a handle on. And this, I trade on this a lot when I think about the questions you just asked, Michael, and a lot of them are conundrums. They're difficult, and there is no answer, because they pertain to the mind of God, who is so much above our mind and who sees so much more and has so much more wisdom. I have to fall back on the things that I do know, that I do have good reason to believe about God's goodness and His power and His reality. Look, he sent His Son to die for us, for goodness sake. What more proof of His love do we need than that? And with that as a backdrop, I am more comfortable saying, I know that situation looks bad. I don't know why God allowed it, but I'm trusting with reason now that He had a morally sufficient justification for doing that. Having said that, let me just quickly come back to another point, though. And you said, why did God create a world like this? Now, you were parroting the questions people ask, but my question at that point, and here's my game plan, why would you think that God created the world the way it is now? Because Christian theology teaches the fall, that when God created everything, it was just the way He intended it to be. It was good. Everything was operating properly. And then there was a rebellion, and the rebellion made a mess of things. And that's the reason why things are, to a great degree, the way they are now. And so the false presumption is that God made it the way it is now instead of man making it the way it is now. And that's the point that I'm going to want to get to by asking that question and drawing people out.
All right, so that what we can do ultimately is say, hey, here's what we know. We're making a mess of things. This is clear. We are making a mess. Human sin. Do you find that in today's society, which starts with me, with narcissism, with it's all about me, and then proceeds from me to God, and this is in a lot of our so-called evangelical churches in preaching as well, that God is now here to fulfill my desires and make me into a bigger and better me. That's why Jesus dies on the cross, as opposed to starting with God and working our way down to man. What can I do to get right with Him? Is that part of the larger epidemic in society that means that we need to do more of the pre-apologetic, the pre-evangelism first?
Yes, this is a secular point of view that has been adopted by the church since we are immersed in our culture. It's like jumping in a pool, you're going to get wet. You don't have to drown, but you can't avoid getting wet. But we have to defend ourselves against going under. And so when the culture is constantly saying me, 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 it's easy for a naive and biblically uneducated Christians to fall into that trap. However, if we look in the New Testament, I mean, just have somebody read 1 Peter, for goodness sake. You'd read the whole thing. It won't take long. It is all about dealing with adversity in this life.
Yeah.
It is an exposition of Jesus' statement, in this world you have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. 1 Peter covers all those bases. And so I don't think anybody can read the New Testament honorably and honestly and come up with prosperity gospel.
Yeah,
that's the answer.
Yeah, with you on that. Hey, we've got one more brief segment with Greg. We'll role play. I'm going to tell him he's bigoted and saying there's only one way to God. Narrow-minded, bigoted. Let's see what he has to say.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. Oh, so the entire show, I can't believe this. I've mispronounced my guest's name the entire show, and he's polite enough to not correct it. That doesn't happen a lot with Brown. I've been saying Greg Kukul instead of Greg Kokel. Sorry about that, dear brother. But we've been sending everyone to the right website. I'm so constantly reading things.
Yes.
Named world leaders, different things. This happens to me.
No worries, brother. You're fortunate to have a simple last name. I've had all kinds of pronunciations. Don't worry about it.
On the flip side, everywhere I go, there are 9,000, 9,900,000 Michael Browns when you're trying to find records, and so it goes both ways. Okay.
Yes.
You may be a nice guy about your last name, and you may have some nice things to say and some nice answers, but you're bigoted. I mean, to say there's one way to go, your way, of course, happens to be your way, Jesus. And so you've got 1.5 billion Muslims, and plenty of them are not terrorists. You've got 13, 14 million Jews, and they were around before Jesus and your New Testament. You've got some nice moral atheists, so there everyone burns, except a little group who happens to go your way, and most of the world doesn't even know your way. That's awfully bigoted for a thinking person.
Okay, now this is a role play, just so your listeners know. So my first response is, Michael, why did you change the subject?
Well, what do you mean? I was one subject the whole way through, like a laser.
We were talking about whether or not Jesus was the only way of salvation, and now we're talking about my personality.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. I'm sorry if I offended you.
No, I'm not offended. I just wanted to point out that you changed the topic. So why do you think it's a productive way of answering the question of whether or not Jesus was right in his own claim by attacking my character and calling me a name?
It seems like you've got to be kind of arrogant. No offense, but to think that all these other sincere people are wrong and you're right, I mean, it does seem arrogant to me.
Let me ask you a question. Is it possible for me to be arrogant and correct in my view?
Sure.
Is it possible for me to be humble and incorrect?
Yeah, good point. All right, you got me there. Yes, it is.
Okay, so whether I'm arrogant or humble has nothing to do with the point. The real issue is whether Jesus' claim is correct or not. I'd be glad to talk about that. But if you want to talk about my character, you're going to find all kinds of things that are wrong with me, and I admit that right away, but that's hardly the point, is it?
All right, so as we continue our role-playing for those just tuning in, so you win there, and I see your point.
Okay.
But look, I've talked to very sincere people with other religions, and they seem to emphasize the same thing and love your neighbor and love God and be a good person. And so I just can't see how all those people are wrong and only Jesus is the only way. I mean,
aren't you making a presumption?
Well, I don't think so.
Aren't you presuming that loving people is the right way to God, and as long as different religions just love people, then they will equally get to God? That was.
But
the point.
I mean, everybody knows that we should love people.
All right. So then you believe in one way to God.
Well, yeah, but it's everybody's way. Well, no, everybody's way.
Well, that is not my view. That is not the classical Christian view. Now, I'm not saying right now that I'm right. I'm just simply saying that I have a different view on this than you do, and you think your way is right. Your way is to love people, and that's what gets you to God. My view is that you can't love people enough to get to God, that your sins are going to destroy you and you need forgiveness. Now, it's not a question of who's right or wrong on the merits of the issues here, but rather you, I'm just making the point. You're faulting me for thinking my way is true, and aren't you simply saying that your opposite view is true and mine is wrong? So how do you escape the arrogance, bigotry charge yourself?
All right. Now, my guest, Greg Kokel, will tell you, say, how did he do that? He just turned the tables very politely by asking questions and now painted me into a corner. And soon enough, you know, as the chess match is going on, he'll start to get in position for checkmate, where I need a savior. You say, how can I do that? I don't have all the degrees Greg has. Well, get his book, Tactics. Greg Kokel, Koukl, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. And it's practically laid out so you can figure out just how to go about doing these things. And then tons of practical resources on the website, standtoreason.org, STR.org. Greg, I thoroughly enjoyed that. And it's a great pitch for your approach, too. And look, I think my role playing was pretty typical there in terms of what's out there.
Yeah, but, that's right. Well, the great Michael Brown was speechless. That's a feather in my cap.
Yeah, that's it. I was outmaneuvered, outmanned, and pinned to the. No, but seriously, I mean, I was trying to genuinely come across from that viewpoint.
No, and, of course, and you did a great job.
Your approach was absolutely masterful. Hey, Greg, I know you're busy. I appreciate you joining us for this hour. Again, the website, str.org. My guest, correctly pronounced, Greg Kokel. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Mike, I hope we get to do it again. Thank you.
Yeah, by all means. All right. Boy, that was fun. I really enjoyed that. And well done, Greg. Thanks so much. All right. Let me read to you from the scriptures, okay? Let's see here. I'm going to read again from the letter of Judah. Here we go. It was reading now in, well, there's only one chapter, but from the Tree of Life version. It was about these people that Enoch, the seventh generation from Adam, prophesied, saying, "Behold, the Lord came with myriads of his kedoshim," holy ones, "to execute judgment against all." It goes on from there. Verse 16, "These are bellyaching grumblers, following after their own desires. Their mouth speaks grandiose things, showing favoritism for the sake of gain. But you, loved ones, ought to remember the words previously proclaimed by the Shlichim, the emissaries of our Lord Yeshua the Messiah. How they kept telling you the last time there will be scoffers following after their own ungodly desires. These are the ones who cause divisions, worldly minded, not having the Ruach, the Spirit." Yes, I am so excited to announce that the shipment of the first 20,000 Tree of Life version Bibles, the complete Bible, this is the new Tree of Life version of the Hebrew Scriptures and the Tree of Life version of the Greek New Testament. You see that it has a distinct messianic touch and feel to it, but it reads in a lively way that you can use in your churches for preaching and teaching, in your private study and reading as well. We suggest a gift of $25, but literally, for your gift of any size, we're just hoping that those that God's blessed with some extra resources, you'll pitch in, maybe pay for 10 or 50 or 100 of these Bibles, so those who have less are able to get them, and 100% of the funds that come in over and above our expenses for the Bibles will go right back into our Jewish ministry and our radio ministry. So call now. The complete Tree of Life version, we'll have them in our hands very soon to ship. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Again, that's 1-800-278-9978. Your generous gift of any size for the first copies of the complete Tree of Life version. My bottom line today, yes, there are many mysteries in the faith, but without a doubt, our faith is reasonable and right sound. Well, what do you think? Was the NBA too harsh in its dealings with Donald Sterling? Is this the right punishment for an alleged racist? And what about implications for where this could go in the future?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, the internet is abuzz, media is abuzz, with the question of Donald Sterling being banned for life by the NBA. Did they act appropriately? Banned for life, $2.5 million fine, forced to sell his team. I read a comment of his that it's the last thing he plans on doing. He's obviously going to fight this legally. Is this a good decision? And you say, I'm not a sports fan. You don't have to be a sports fan. This is bigger than sports. Is this a good decision? Is this a way to clearly send a message about racism in America in the 21st century? Or is this extreme? Is this punishing him for past transgressions today? Is it unequal? In other words, are there many other transgressions among others in the NBA that are being overlooked? A potential slippery slope whereby you don't know what is going to be politically correct tomorrow. We all condemn the remarks and the attitude behind them, but what could be coming next? What do you think? This is why we do live talk radio. One of the reasons, so we can interact. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. In fact, Joey, I want to start with clip number 7. And this is Adam Silver, who is the new president of the NBA. Boy, it's a Jewish-sounding name, just like the past president. David Stern was Jewish-sounding, for good reason. Jewish-sounding as Jews. That's interesting. That's a whole other subject. But let's listen to what was actually said. Again, Donald Sterling. And by the way, the most bizarre part in the story is that he received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Association of Colored People, the NAACP, just a few years ago, even though he had lawsuits against him, accusing him of discriminatory treatment. Yes, he's had black coaches, yes, many black players, and on, there have been past cases involving him. The NBA did nothing. Now it acts, the right thing, overdone. We'll talk about it. This is what Adam Silver had to say. Number 7.
Effective immediately, I am banning Mr. Sterling for life from any association with the Clippers organization or the NBA. Mr. Sterling may not attend any NBA games or practices. He may not be present at any Clippers facility, and he may not participate in any business or player personnel decisions involving the team. He will also be barred from attending NBA Board of Governors meetings or participating in any other league activity. I am also fining Mr. Sterling $2.5 million, the maximum amount allowed under the NBA Constitution.
All right. And by the way, $2.5 million, obviously, for most of us, that would be absolutely devastating and more than many of us would make in a lifetime. Obviously, from his perspective, it's a major slap on the wrist, but being forced to sell the team would be the bigger issue. I've read that he could potentially make over $500 million in the sale. But privately recorded conversation, now banned for life. What if he had expressed views about some other group? What if a black coach had privately said that he hates these white owners and they're, you know, just a bunch of bigots? What would happen? How should these things be addressed? 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the broadcast. It's Wednesday. We often focus on the world, moral, cultural issues. Today we're talking about the NBA's treatment of Clippers owner Donald Sterling, banned for life, being forced to sell the team and fine $2.5 million. There's a lot of talk about this, rightly so. Let's just say this. I'm assuming that every civil-minded person and the vast majority of my listeners would be in this category. Every one of you says that, of course, his comments were ugly and wrong. And look, this is a guy married 50-something years, but with mistresses and paying for sex and these other issues. So it's not that anyone is defending him as an exemplary human being or defending his comments. That's default. We all recognize that. The question is the NBA's treatment, and could this lead to further issues in terms of freedoms? In other words, do you have freedom to have bigoted views as long as you don't act on them? Is that part of our right as an American? 866, part of our rights, I should say, as Americans. 866-34-TRUTH. Phone lines are lighting up as expected. Let me just play one more quote. And Joey, let's go to number 14. This is Al Sharpton, not unexpectedly weighing in on this. Let's listen to what he had to say. And then I want to get to as many of you, my dear callers, through this hour as possible. Number 14.
No one that has this kind of sentiment ought to be sanctioned or certified by the NBA. And if they do not move immediately, we're planning on Tuesday to rally in front of the National Basketball Association in New York. And I've talked to my people in L.A. about rallying in front of the game. He should be removed if, in fact, these statements are proved to be authentic on tape. Mm-hmm. And there's little doubt that they are. We cannot have a man being certified as an owner in a sports team that is all-American making such blatant racist and biased statements, and we do not intend to let this go unanswered by the African-American community.
And, of course, the NBA acted and acted as strongly as could be imagined. Oh, I've even read a comment here and there by some national organizations that the NBA could have gone further. What's your take? Now, I want to do my best just to mediate taking phone calls. If you could get to your point as quickly as possible, that'd be great. But I want to do my best just to listen and interact on a minimum level to get to as many of you as possible. 866-34-TRUTH. We start in Nashville, Tennessee with Justin. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Mike. We met over the weekend. It was great being able to do that. I just had a quick point. I read on Breitbart, Ben Shapiro wrote an article that showed, I think it's titled, 8 Things You Can Do to Not Get Banned.
Yeah, I have that in front of me, actually.
Dude, oh, okay. All right. I hope it's not redundant. But, you know, in 2009, he settled a lawsuit with the Department of Justice where he had said, you know, all these different races smelled. He didn't want them in his apartments, things like that. He was actually awarded by the NAACP. They didn't come out. They didn't say anything. Spike Lee is actually an NBA-sponsored radio host. It basically made some incendiary comments in the 90s about shooting whites because of gentrification. You've got one guy that chokes his coach. He beats
right, Latrell Sprewell.
Yeah,
In terms of your own view, Justin, do you think the NBA is overreacting or acting hypocritical? Should they ban these others as well?
I think it's hypocritical. I think it is strictly because of the unique attention this has gotten as opposed to other things. So I don't think they're just the pinnacle of morals or anything like that. They've completely turned a blind eye to many other instances that would anyone would agree would make their organization look ugly. But it didn't get an attention, therefore they didn't address it.
Got it. All right. Thank you for weighing in. And so folks know I pay attention when we meet. That was Justin with his 8-year-old son, Elliot, who has younger twin sisters. I think I got that right. All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Kent, you're next on the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing well, thank you.
I just got a question. Invasion of privacy. Okay, everything, there's a lot of proof that he did a lot of things negatively toward the black population or culture in certain areas. But why does it take to invade someone's privacy to have something done about it? I just have an issue with that. I mean, I think a lot of people looking at a lot of things about it, but I mean, the first thing is, okay, this man's privacy was invaded.
Right, got it. So I think an Adam Silver response would be, well, it was private when public, but that's a fair question to raise. Kent, invasion of privacy, privately made comments. If I have the discretion to say something in private, knowing it shouldn't be said in public, should I be punished for that? Thanks for raising it. Let's just see. Joey, clip number 10 addresses this. This is Q&A from the reporters speaking to NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. Number 10.
Should someone lose their team for remarks shared in private? Is this a slippery slope?
Whether or not these remarks were initially shared in private, they are now public, and they represent his views.
Ah, so what do you think about that? What do you think about that? You send an email to your spouse saying something privately, and hey, you've got negative views. Again, no one that is civilly and fairly minded is defending the comments for a split second. But is it, we're just raising questions for discussion. Is it appropriate to be punished for private comments that were made in private? Okay, they become public. Now, what if he had renounced them immediately? What about that? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Richmond, Virginia. Tracy, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Okay, yeah, I just was listening in, and there's a couple of things that are in front of me, and it's just a reminder that we live in a time, I mean, you do the best you can to keep your family safe as far as privacy, but there is no privacy now. So as a believer, the thing that comes up before me is, if my privacy is invaded for whatever reason, what kind of witness am I? Whether I think they hear me or see me, or whether I think I'm all alone. So as a believer, that's my major issue. And, you know, it's what I do and what I say. And as far as, you know, someone else, I mean, I think what they did, I guess you could say it was fair. But like I said, as a believer, my major concern is what I do and how I treat people, because I'm being judged by a higher standard. If I have Christ within me, I don't have the same standard as the world. So mm-hmm. mine has to be higher. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
and, you know, Tracy, it's excuse me, interesting you mentioned that. Nancy and I were talking about, you know, how much information does the government have, and with the leaks from Snowden and stuff like that, and you know, how much does the government track your emails or other businesses? And of course, privacy is important. On the other hand, Nancy and I were saying we would not want to communicate anything, even privately, that was displeasing in the Lord's sight. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
So there is that aspect. But, you know, the reminder of this, the reminder is that Jesus said that what is spoken in private will be shouted from the rooftops. And these days, when we, you know, you post a note to someone thinking you sent it to one person and realize the whole world can be reading it online. So all the more do we need to be careful. But thank you for bringing that up and that perspective as a follower of Jesus. 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, you can weigh in on any part of this discussion that as long as it pertains to this specific issue. Let's go to Plano, Texas. Ralph, you're on the Line of Fire.
Hi. Well, I have a little bit of a different perspective on this entire matter.
Please.
First of all, my concern would be that with the hate crime bill going on and things of that nature, that this is a dangerous thing to take part in. At the same time, I think there are more convenient ways of handling this circumstance. I think that the NBA could have, done it with first right of refusal on draft choices, limiting draft choices. Publicly, we could boycott the games And rather than him being able to sell his franchise for $2 billion, he would probably end up selling it for far less. But I think to punish him for his thinking, for his sentiments, I think that's very dangerous, and I think it's something that could lead to repercussions down the line. But
yeah,
I do
Ralph,
think that the NBA had to respond.
Yeah, they had to, of course. And Ralph, you raise a very, very important point, wisely and clearly stated. A whole lot to think about. Of course, the other issue is if he's not dealt with and kicked out, it punishes the fans, it punishes the players because you're associated with him. Anyway, thank you, sir, for weighing in.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. Joey, we'll play clip number 12 in a moment. President Obama weighing in. How do you feel about that? Is this a good time to weigh in? Does it seem too selective to you? We're talking about Donald Sterling's comments and then being banned for life by the NBA. What's your thought on it? Is he being punished for private comments? NBA should have punished him years earlier. Just fair questions to discuss again. We renounce his comments and the spirit behind them. I absolutely believe the NBA needed to do something strong. The question is, it brings up so many other issues. The fact that, about 75% of NBA players are black, And you have one Asian, I guess it's Jeremy Lin, then you have white, Hispanic, etc. And are they being treated fairly? Is America being entertained by black athletes? But then you don't see the same, you don't have the same representation through ownership or management. But then, hey, if you watch a talk show, it seems the great majority of those talking about the NBA, the experts are black former players, etc. How should these things balance out? And do we really have a problem with racism? Or is it an exaggerated incident? Just a bunch of things to discuss. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Dallas, Texas. Andrew, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes. How are you today?
Doing very well. Thank you, sir.
I would like to make a comment concerning the decision concerning the Sterling case. I, an African-American, wouldn't celebrate that so greatly because I look at it as a very high standard that was set, and it could come back to bite us as well.
How so?
Well, that's high standard set up for this billionaire. In a way, with all of the other factors, if it was a private conversation in his home and someone eavesdropped on him and recorded it, then that brings about another issue. If that can be made public, wow, you have no privacy. Now, if he made this statement and someone said in public or over a telephone, and I can look at it as what? Once you make a statement like I'm talking to you now over the phone and stuff, somebody picks it up, I'm really talking over public media. So that brings about another issue. So I would say it's a high, very high standard,
So if he had actually made a statement, say, to the press, a bigoted, ugly statement like this to the press, then, I mean, obviously he just hung himself intentionally for the whole world to see.
Right.
So that. The issue is not the comments as much as the context of them and privately held.
Right.
Yeah, Andrew, I think you speak for many when you raise those concerns. And by the way, in this context, you don't have to identify your ethnicity or background or color, but it's helpful, as Andrew does, to say, hey, I'm not celebrating this. Obviously, something had to be done. So thank you. Thank you, sir, for weighing in. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Farmington, Utah. Alice, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First of all, I'm really glad that you're addressing this whole issue because I believe it's being blown out of proportion in the media. And I agree with the previous callers that this is it's an attack on our freedom of speech, and it's an invasion of privacy. And it's a reflection of where we are as a society, that the media is focusing on one thing when in reality it's a diversionary tactic from a bigger picture of the fact that there is no privacy if we can't speak in our homes. And I look at this poor guy, Sterling, he's being lynched by the media. And it's disturbing to watch our society just fall so far. And people are so blind, they don't see what's going on.
Got it. And of course, no one is going to defend what he said, who has any sanity. So does that mean everyone just gangs up immediately? And again, Donald Sterling has not been an exemplary character in many ways, in terms of immorality, in terms of other things that we would all say are wrong. Is he being treated rightly, fairly? Tell you what, I don't want to rush your call, so stay right where you are. The next segment, I want to get to more calls. Let's listen to President Obama weighing in. This is before the sentence was passed by the NBA. Clip number 12.
The United States continues to wrestle with a legacy of race and slavery and segregation. That's still there. The vestiges of discrimination. We've made enormous strides, but you know, you're going to continue to see this percolate up every so often. And I think that we just have to be clear and steady in denouncing it, teaching our children differently, but also remaining hopeful that part of why some statements like this stand out so much is because there have been a shift. There has been this shift in how we view ourselves.
So the question, is it good that the president did weigh in? Is this the right thing for him to be doing? Or does it further fuel fires when there's so many other issues to be addressed? I will, every one of you on the line, I will absolutely get to your calls on the other side of the break. And then as soon as lines clear up, we will get to more of you. Yeah, Dwight, great point. You know, you have some great point. I'll probably put that in an article I'm writing. You have some celebrity releases a sex tape, either privately gets released or intentionally on their end to get publicity, and makes them into stars. Yeah, what kind of world are we living in? I'm reading from Hebrews 1 in the Tree of Life, Messianic version. At many times and in many ways, God spoke long ago to the fathers through the prophets. In these last days, he has spoken to us through a son whom he appointed heir of all things and through whom he created the universe. This son is the radiance of his glory and the imprint of his being, upholding all things by his powerful word. When he had made purification for our sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. And go down to verse 10. In the beginning, Adonai, you laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. Oh, that's the way it is in Hebrew in Psalm 102. So now that's carried over here. The Tree of Life version, it is a brand new translation of the entire Bible. I've been involved in part of it as well. The very first shipments are on their way to us any day now. Literally, we are one of the few ministries in America that has these, the complete Bible, the Hebrew Scriptures, Greek New Testament, translated into English. It's a beautiful, lively translation, but with messianic sensitivities. Yeshua, Adonai, Miriam, the Ruach, things like that. We suggest a gift of $25, but your gift of any size, we want to send you a first copy of this as soon as it comes in. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. The Tree of Life, Messianic Version. 1-800-278-9978.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. What do you think about the NBA's treatment of Donald Sterling for his privately recorded comments now made public? Banned for life, forced to sell his team, and a $2.5 million fine. By the way, just on a different note, but don't miss it, my latest article, John Kerry, Israel and Apartheid. John Kerry, Israel and Apartheid. Read it on townhall.com. Just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article. All right, let's go back to the phones. Well, that means we've got a line open, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Nathan, you're on the line of fire.
Yes, Dr. Brown, thank you for taking my call. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Tulsa.
Yes, that's Doctor. Right. We did speak recently, yeah. But because we've opened the phone lines wide, you get to get in again today.
Yes, thank you so much. Appreciate that. Listen, I've got several points. One is the private issue, and the other would be, the flip-flop stance that the NCAA CP has taken. And then also the news fodder that this has become. And being that our society seems to be sort of a pollster-run society, that whichever way the wind blows, it seems everyone's jumping on the bandwagon. And I have a concern. And as a believer and a minister of the gospel, and my concern is that, you know, being born and raised in Hawaii and a conservative in a very liberal state, I was taught as a young man that my first obligation was to Christ, not to my heritage. Yet I am proud of it. And so there's an understanding, and as I began to develop my faith, started realizing that to be thankful what Jesus did for me and what Christ has done, what the gospel of Jesus Christ has done for the state of Hawaii and bringing that message to the Hawaiian people, I am proud of that heritage. And it's a rich concept that I think is missing. And I think for me, as a born-again Christian, as a minister of the Lord Jesus Christ, being thankful is missing in our society. I am thankful as a Hawaiian.
Right. And yeah, just to jump in, I'm sorry, but just to jump in, get to as many calls as possible. So just a larger statement on the state of the culture and the mindset of the culture and what it needs to be and what we need to draw on. Hey, Nathan, I do appreciate your comments. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Lexington, North Carolina. Jane, you are now on the line of fire.
It's Jane, Dr. Brown, Jane.
All right. Well, we're just reading what I got in front of me. Go ahead.
I'll be honest. I was given a synopsis of what was going on. I did not listen to it, but my synopsis was that this man was giving black athletes a lot of materialistic things. So my question was, if they had any integrity, why were they allowing themselves to be bought? And why are we persecuting a man for something that other people accepted? So I know we go by double standards. I think the NAACP jumped on the bandwagon too quick for a lot of issues. So I think they're totally wrong in prosecuting this man. That's my opinion.
Got it. All right. Hey, I appreciate you weighing in, and that's exactly what I'm asking folks to do. 866-34-TRUTH. I've just got 20 seconds before the break. You wouldn't want me to give you 20 seconds, would you? Have you ordered your signed copy, numbered, of Can You Be Gay and Christian? Book is due out in a week. We should have our copies in very soon. And the first couple hundred that come in will be numbered, signed by me with a scripture for you. And it's going to be a very, very important book. So practical, answers your questions in a compassionate way. On the website, askdrbrown.org, right on the homepage, askdrbrown.org.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire as we discuss the NBA's treatment of Donald Sterling. What's interesting is as we've been opening this up, I haven't heard a lot of people say that the NBA acted the right way. Everyone agreeing something needed to be done. 866-34-TRUTH. Joe, let's play number 9. This is NBA Commissioner Adam Silver responding to questions from the media. Right after this, straight to your calls.
Will this situation cause you moving forward to put new rules in place for owners from the NBA?
I'm not sure. I mean, we're always willing to take a fresh look at our rules, our constitution and bylaws, but I believe we have appropriate rules in place right now to cover a situation like this.
All right. So many related questions, and I'm wide open to weighing in on any aspect of this issue. And I'm probably going to write an article on it tonight, and we'll let you know as soon as it's posted. Let's go to... I was going to go to Charlotte, North Carolina, and there was an interesting name. I was going to ask where it came from, but I guess they couldn't hold anymore. We'll go over to Rutherford, Texas. Don, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. I gotta put it. If they're gonna ban one person for trying to say something racist, well, by all the other players who are being racist, all these other coaches, that's not right. I've seen a lot of racism go along all my life, and not once have I ever seen anything done about it. That's my eyes for punishing one man for something. That's not right for everyone else. The U.S. and the United States is supposed to be treated equally, and one man can punish for something, and that's not equal in my eyes.
All right, got it. So let's just turn this around and ask maybe – you said you haven't seen people punished through the years. Do you think they should have been? In other words, you think this is the right thing, but it hasn't been done consistently, or we can't be punishing people for privately held beliefs?
I'm saying that I don't think he should be punished for talking to his girlfriend, talk to his partner. And on top of that, how do we know that's actually him? Because technology is so highly advanced nowadays. You can make a recording and change it up. It is, you know, I got to know how to, who to go to.
Yep.
Those records can easily change.
In this case, he's not denying the comments or expressing remorse over them. But, that, of course, that's a fair question to raise otherwise. All right, Don, thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. And by the way, yes, Elgin Baylor had a lawsuit against him years ago. Other NBA players have said, yes, he was discriminatory in the way he ran his organization. Obviously, that's completely unacceptable. You know, the owners, the NBA, it's their organization. They can say how they're going to run things unless it clearly breaks the law. But had he treated his coach, an African-American, Doc Rivers, unfairly, had he treated his African-American players or other executives unfairly, those are other questions to raise. And by the way, there's zero in me wanting to defend Donald Sterling in the least. I'm just putting out questions for discussion. Of course, the NBA had to act. In my view, it was an overreaction and one that raises other questions. But, of course, something had to be done. Let's go over to Ogden, Utah. Patrice, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. God bless you. You know, there are a lot of different things going on in different level, and if you look at it from God's point of view, this man was living in sin.
Yep.
This woman, his prostitute, that's what she was. And a woman like that will bring a man down. If he sins and he's not following the laws of Jesus Christ, you know, no matter how mighty he is, God will bring him down. Now, I do believe that the organization, that they're doing what they think is politically correct, but what is becoming politically correct in this country is going farther and farther away from God's truth, okay? And if you're a Christian and you do not believe in marriage of the same sex, and you speak out against it, you are not politically correct. You can get sued. You can get in trouble. Standing up for God's word is becoming more and more difficult as far as Christians having their rights.
Patrice, first, I love the comment, the reminder that you play with fire, you get burned. You play with fire and you get burned, and it comes in unexpected ways. Just a warning for all of us. You know, if you're not in the wrong place at the wrong time, that wrong thing may not happen to you. I'm not talking about getting hit by a tornado. I'm talking about you're dealing drugs in a bad area, and you get in the middle of a crossfire and get killed between gangs. If you weren't there, the likelihood of getting in that crossfire would go way, way down. But yeah, does this tie in? What if he had said something about, look, everybody's welcome at my game, but I'm uncomfortable with two guys making out in the building or something like that. And then, you know, he has that privately expressed view, and is he going to get banned for that? Just questions that are logical questions to come up. Let's go to Richmond, Virginia. Tony, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. I think that there's a myriad of issues at hand. As far as my view, I do agree that the NBA did the right thing to deal with the issue at hand. I think from a spiritual perspective, a lot of times we don't realize the impact. Culture has an impact, and God doesn't have a problem with culture. But I think in the United States of America, we have not really addressed the issues as they relate to slavery and racism. And a lot of times when those issues come up, I mean, we feel that the African-American people really should get over it, just get over it. But until something is really done to take ownership for the legacy of 150 years of keeping people from having property, from having finances, from owning anything, you really have to deal with that. And then for this gentleman to own a basketball team, but yet act as though he owned the human being, that was something that they really needed to address.
Got it.
For many of the callers to say that they think it's blown out of proportion, that's really easy to say. But the whole legacy of denying people their right to freedom and happiness and to wealth, we really have to deal with that as a country, and I don't think we're ready to do that. We're not doing it in our churches. Our churches are segregated, and so people feel justified to burn a cross with a sheet over their head and they say that they're Christians. So,
yeah, and of course, you know, Tony, I think on a positive level that the vast majority of people who call themselves Christians would repudiate something like that today. But just a quick question for you, and this is why we asked for calls so folks could weigh in. If someone said that Donald Sterling paid his coaches, his players, many of whom were Black Americans, African Americans, paid them megabucks and made them into wealthy people, doesn't that balance things out? I'm just playing the devil's advocate here for a second.
Well, I would say to that, when you employ someone, that employment causes for a wage. Even the Bible talks about that. So it wasn't that they were given so much. They worked for it. So I think a lot of times people fail to see that these people are working for their wages. And they're bringing, even though they may be making millions of dollars, if you look at someone buying a team in the 80s for $12 million and it's now worth $575 million, then it's obvious that they're not even being paid a portion of what they're making for this team.
Got it. Hey, Tony, thank you so much for weighing in. I appreciate it very much. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina. Mark, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah, what I found really amazing about this story is that he was turned in by his girlfriend, and there's no mention of infidelity or adultery or anything like that.
I mean, he was already caught in something where, you know, he had us, you know, paying for sex and saying all kinds of outlandish things in a previous issue, and he made the statement, I believe, to the effect of, hey, when you pay money for it, you think you can do whatever you want or something like that. So I guess that's just part of the larger narrative. But you're right. Let's just say this, as married men, how many years was he married? 50 years? Are you married, Mark?
I'm not, no.
Okay, well, just if you were, Nancy and I've been married 38 years, from the perspective of a wife, I think she would rather have her husband be faithful to her and then make a bigoted comment that's unfortunate than be paying to have a mistress and committing adultery but not making the bigoted comment. So, of course, both are wrong, but it is interesting that so little is said about something that's just another part of the... I mean, it's obviously... Well, you think of that, though. Think of that. The NBA would not take action against him for paying for a mistress, right? Or having a mistress. But it's going to take action about the comments. That's just a whole other issue. Again, not defending. Not defending anything he said and done for a split second. All right, back with your calls.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we got a few more minutes to take calls on the Donald Sterling issue. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go over to Charlotte, North Carolina. Brian, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon, Dr. Brown. Thank you so much for taking my call as you have.
You're welcome.
On a short amount of time, I'll be quick. First and foremost, I must say Patrice from Colorado, I think it was, she covered exactly what my thoughts were in the sense that this is a man who is falling on his proverbial sword based on the fact that he continually thumbed his nose at what he knows to be a truth of God. I mean, even going all the way back to the Old Testament. So inside of his culture, he understood that this, when coming to light to his wife or his family or his business mates, though this could have become an eventual outcome, meaning his private conversation being taped by said mistress. And, of course, I go back to the example of Samson and Delilah. You know, she found his weakness. She recorded it. She may have made money off of it. We have no knowledge of that yet. But in the end, he is now chained to the two pillars, the NBA, and his lifestyle, and now he's blinded, can't see. You know, I could go on and on and forever. But the secondary point I want to bring to light, and I think we as Americans, no matter what our viewpoints are in private, this is what happens when they come to public, and that is the other 29 owners who a majority of are not of African-American descent. They are now grouping themselves together. And they may just not, let's as in America, get together and get prepared. They may not take this team from him because of what happened to this man publicly. And now it is, they want to ensure, because it is about money, let's be honest.
Yeah, obviously.
Right, no one is thinking about God in this. No one. Let's be perfectly honest about that. There is not one person at that board table. Well, let me not throw the rock at everybody, okay? I thought about what Jesus said.
Right.
Let me not throw the rock at everybody. But it is a great chance that not one of those other 29 owners are considering what God and his word says when they go to think about taking this team away from this man.
And just to say this, the other question is, and if you assume Donald Sterling is going to fight this, what is he, 81? But you assume he's going to fight this, and... we're going to make something like $500 million in selling the team. But in any case, there are questions about other owners having skeletons in their closet. And what does this mean to them? Thank you for the call. Tell you what, we'll stay in Charlotte. Paula, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Am I on?
Well, if you're talking to me, it sounds like you are.
Gosh, my cell phone's going to die any minute.
Talk fast.
But you're awesome, by the way. Anyway, I don't have time to follow sports all the time, but my brother played with the Chicago Cubs, and my brother-in-law played with the Atlanta Braves. So I know a little bit about it, and I think that the whole professional sports realm is missing basically Christianity. There are Christians in professional sports, but like Tim Tebow, he had a hard time. I think they have a hard time.
Right. All right. Hey,
Paula. Am I making sense?
Yeah, yeah. You were. Okay. I appreciate that. Yeah, appreciate you weighing in. I'm just trying to grab one more call. Sorry to cut you off in midstream there. But, you know, there are a lot of related issues. Maybe I'll get them sorted out in an article. Okay, one last call. We're just going to squeeze in Anthony from Fort Worth, Texas, but time is short, so dive in.
Absolutely. Dr. Brown, how are you doing, first of all? I've got a couple issues with this thing. Being a Christian, this is tough. One, what is the NBA really doing about saying, hey, we're going to avoid this issue from ever arising again? I mean, could they have put this guy in some kind of therapy? I mean, versus, and I'm a Christian, but at the same time, I don't want to be the one to say, hey, you know, like a Mary Magdalene situation, right? You know, he without sin cast the first stone, right? I mean, did we learn anything?
Right, and here's the question. On the one hand, you cannot require him to hold to a viewpoint, to have a privately held, non-bigoted viewpoint. In other words, I don't think the league has the right to do that, but to demand to have a severe punishment and then to demand a statement of repudiation and regret, even if private, you know, you're not going to put him in a re-education camp, but get him to do the right thing on that score or make some type of donation, you know, to another cause. But, you know, what I've got to sort out here, and I want to look into tonight. But thank you for the call. And so sorry to others that tried to get through or were on hold that we just weren't able to get to. But I love the fact that you're listening, and I love the fact we can do live radio. And week in, week out, I've got so much to say and things on my heart. But hearing from you, interacting with you is what makes this such a special thing to do live talk radio. Thanks for being part of the family, part of the listening audience. You can always weigh in on my website as well, or we've got a discussion going on Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook, where I ask the question for folks to weigh in. You can weigh in there. Decision Magazine, Billy Graham's organization, has a tremendous issue, the May issue, which just arrived. No compromise. And I'm thrilled to be in that issue as well. I was asked to revise my article on the apostasy of world vision when they made their ill-advised stand last month and then immediately reversed it. So reflections on that. And I saw a quote I just posted that Franklin Graham said his father, Dr. Billy Graham, always said it's only a small step from compromise to deceit. I'm reading from Revelation 1. In the Tree of Life Messianic Version, the revelation of Yeshua the Messiah, which God gave to him to show his servants the things that must soon take place. He made it known by sending his angel to his servant John, who testified to the word of God and to the testimony of Yeshua the Messiah, to everything he saw. Verse 4, to Messiah's seven communities in Asia. I thought it was churches. That's not the best translation of the Greek. This is much more accurate. To Messiah's seven communities in Asia, grace to you and shalom from him who is and who was and who is to come, as well as from the seven spirits who are before his throne, and from Messiah Yeshua, the faithful witness, the firstborn of the dead, and the ruler of the kings of the earth, to him who loves us and has freed us from our sins by his blood and made us a kingdom, Kohanim, priests, to his God and Father, to him be glory and power forever and ever. Yes, this is the Tree of Life version, and for the first time, the Old Testament and New Testament are available in this vibrant new Messianic translation. I've been part of the translation committee and reviewed portions of the books of the Bible in this version. Get a copy. Literally, there are 20,000 copies that have been printed and shipped over. This is the advance. Only a few ministries in America have these. We are one of them. We suggest $25, but literally, your gift of any size, we just ask you to be as generous as you can. Your gift of any size, we will send you the very first complete Tree of Life Messianic Version Bible used for church, private use, Messianic congregation. Call now to order, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, as we discuss issues of racism and the NBA, let us be determined to have more light than heat. Let us be constructive in our interactions.